Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples, here on Seminole Sports Radio. Once again, this show sponsored by Luis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, trained photographer, videographer who makes houses look great on the internet. And if you're in the Jacksonville area, have any real estate needs, go ahead and give Luis a call. His information in the show notes. Already had one referral through this podcast. Let him know that you heard about him through this podcast. Definitely helps out a ton. Also, this is December. Well, we're entering December. I guess it's still November. As we enter December, let's go ahead and push for more five-star ratings. I know we've got a lot of you out there who I've gotten great feedback from on the podcast over the years. But I haven't really pushed for five-star ratings in iTunes and elsewhere. Let's go ahead and make a push in this December. Take a moment to rate this podcast, and it definitely helps this podcast get more listenership and increase sponsorship and so on, which helps me a ton. So let's go ahead and get to it. Now, this was going to be initially the regularly scheduled let's talk about the last game and break it down and all that stuff, and usually there'd be a little bit of zest for life in breaking down the fourth straight win in Gainesville, the fifth straight win over Florida. Normally, that would be this would be a longer show just to talk about that. But obviously, the thing on everybody's mind is not the fresh but suddenly seeming so distant win over Florida, but the job status of Jimbo Fisher and what he's going to do in terms of the Texas A&M job. So most of this show is going to be directed at that. And, you know, before I go any further, I have to say, you know, I didn't give those rumors. I mean, I'd heard them. I'd heard, stuff from the A&M side, stuff from a few other places. You know, A&M is going to put a lot of money on the table, and Fisher is going to be interested, might be interested. I'd heard some of that stuff, but didn't really take it seriously because I've heard that stuff about Jimbo before. And, you know, again, in the past, all of those things have not, meant actual interest from Fisher. If anything, things have been used as a leverage chip because he knows he's got one of the top five jobs in the country, regardless of the resource situation and regardless of how much more he wants to make this an even better job. And, you know, generally speaking, coaches don't leave a top five job in the country, or as Dave Bartu on Twitter pointed out, a top three job in the country in terms of potential, in terms of capacity to win. People don't leave that for a tier three or tier four job. You know, coaches don't do that. So, you know, I just kind of dismissed it until Saturday when, Sunday when I texted one of my best sources in the athletic department because of hearing a little bit stronger rumblings, texted and said, "Hey, so annual tradition I see is underway, and you know, all these rumors starting to swirl, all this smoke about Fisher. Anything I should actually pay attention to? And you know, any real reason for concern?" And I just got back, "Yep." And that changed everything for me, because all of a sudden you're dealing with the real possibility that Fisher could leave from someone close to Fisher. And that's very different. Very, very, very different. So, yeah, that means that this show is going to be talking more about what I've gathered. I mean, I've reached out to a lot more people since then and have gotten more information. It's hard to get good information on this, but you know, I feel like a lot of the people that I've gotten stuff from have some sense of what's going on. So we'll talk more about that than about five straight against Florida, and you know what happens when you play a bad quarterback. just do, but before I do get to a lot of that Fisher stuff, I do want to talk a little bit about that Florida game. Let's spend maybe 5 minutes on it, because it does deserve that. Now, first things first, that was, as a lot of people expected, ugly offensive football on both sides. Florida State averaged 3.93 yards per play, which is awful, and gave up 3.84 yards per play, which is stellar on the defensive side. But even with that, they shouldn't be real happy with the way that the defense played in stretches in that game, where that Florida offense is awful, and they gave up some plays to that team. The end of the first half drive, the way Florida drove up the field and scored is just vintage Florida State defense in 2017. Just inexcusable to constantly give up drives at the end of halves and the end of games. And they gave up one at the end of the half and at the end of the game in this one. Now, end of the game, I it's a little more excusable. Game's over and they're just letting the clock run and all that. But still, get them off the field. And, you know, I was talking with one practice source not long ago, and he was saying, yeah, well, they do 2-minute drill end of every, a couple times a week at the end of practice, and the offense just basically hits the back out of the backfield who's never covered, or just a little shallow cross, and it's 10 yards here, 9 yards here, 11 yards here, and they're right in position every week, every day, every time they do it, and the defense just constantly gives it up. And it's because you got guys, and this person named names, you've got guys, you know, Matthew Thomas and Jacob Pugh and some of these other guys that when they're on the field, they do their own thing. And suddenly, you know, guy's uncovered because he wants to go this way instead of fulfilling his responsibility. And it's been frustrating even in practice, which you wouldn't be surprised by. I don't think, I certainly wasn't, but anyway, yeah, so, I thought James Blackman played well overall, despite the fact that they only had 3.93 yards per play, despite the fact that he only had 128 passing yards. I thought James Blackman played reasonably well. He missed a number of checkdowns, which seems to be routine for him right now, but he threw some dimes as well. You know, the throw to Ermine Lane on the seam, on the backside of a play where he recognized the safety overcommitting and through to the seam in the slot on the backside. That's a great throw. Nice read too. The throw to Tate was a great throw and a great catch for a touchdown. The throw to Noonie Murray for a touchdown, a great throw. And then a very good throw on the one that Noonie Murray decided to showboat on a little bit, hold that ball out from his body right after he catches it instead of tucking and being fundamental. And then it gets called a non-catch, even though it was a catch. But son, you know what? You deserve it because you left some doubt. You remove all doubt in those situations by fundamentally tucking the football and doing your thing rather than holding the ball out and putting yourself in position to yap after the play. Well, you know, you got what you deserved. And there's just been so much of that all year. And, you know, this game, there were a few microcosms of it. Matthew Thomas's slide into the inside the 1 yard line is one more example of exactly how this team just it can't succeed. It can't handle the idea that it would succeed, that there are some of these guys. And again, you know, my sources on this continue to say, listen, there are a handful of these guys who just, they're the loudest guys on the team. They're the ones that are the most natural leaders in many respects, because they're the ones that set the tone and bring the noise. And they're the guys that want to go and do their own thing and lead guys to do anything except for what they're coached to do. And they've got it's not very many of them, but there's enough of them. There's a handful of them on this team, and they just continue to do stuff like that. And it's been like that all year. That continues to be the problem. For what it's worth, Tavarius McFadden, not one of those players, from what I was told. I know he's been a bit of a whipping boy from the perspective of fans. But, you know, I was told, listen, he's a guy who really cares, really competes hard, and does what he's coached to do, although that's not always fundamentally sound. And he just lost a lot of confidence after that Miami game, and said it took about a month for him to start to rebuild some sense that, you know, that he could play. That, you know, he got his confidence shattered, and that's an interesting thing to have heard. In any case, let's go ahead and get to the Jimbo Fisher discussion. Like I said, this all changed for me on Sunday when and you know, those of you who follow me on Twitter know that on Sunday, about midday, I don't know, 11 o'clock or so, I tweeted, so there's apparently a bit more heat to this smoke than I expected. And that was because I reached out, I actually started taking it seriously once I heard from a reliable source that it was viable. And ever since then, there's been a real chance that Fisher leaves for Texas A&M. This is not like prior years. This is not like a situation where he's not really considering leaving. He's in a position where A&M has put a massive offer on the table, and obviously it's a lot more money, but it's not a matter of money. Fisher's not asking Florida State for money. Not for himself. He's not asking for a new contract so that he's making $7.5 million plus a year like he would be at Texas A&M. It's not about money. But there are a number of things that this is about, and Fisher has been torn on this decision. Now, I'm recording this early on Tuesday morning, and this is the word that I've gotten is that the decision has not been made, that he's still considering a lot of things. But again, last night he met with players, you know, in preparation for the game in the afternoon and evening, and in the meetings, the things that he said didn't give me the warm and fuzzies that he's not leaving. And like I said, the decision has not been made. What he told the players is, you will not hear, don't worry about anything. I'm still your coach. And, you know, if I were ever to leave, if I were leaving, you would not hear it on the news. You'd hear it from me first. Well, that's not the sort of thing that he was saying in previous years, where he's saying, I'm staying, to his players and to recruits. When he's telling them, you know, just let's go about business. If something happens, you'll hear about it from me first. Yikes. This is let's just put it this way. If he's playing chicken with the administration, he's gone further to sell it this time than he has in previous years. Now, I know he had a meeting with President Thrasher, Florida State President Thrasher, on Sunday night, and that meeting resolved without a resolution, that Thrasher told Fisher, we'll be fine with or without you, but, you know, obviously we want you to stay. And Fisher laid some things out that he wants to see done at Florida State, and he's very frustrated with some things that he's had to fight for and he's clawed for and feels like not all promises have been met in terms of things that that have been pushed forward for him. And he wants some restructuring. He wants some things that he wants more resources and more commitment in areas that Florida State has promised commitment before. So that ultimately is where that meeting went. Thrasher, from what I was told, he told Jimbo, and he has undertaken steps to make sure that he told Jimbo that Florida State will give him most of what he's asking, but they can't give him all that he's asking in terms of resources and so on at this point. But they can give him most of what he's asking, and that they're going to undertake steps to get that underway right now. And Stan Wilcox, athletic director, was in meetings last night, that is Monday night, trying to address some of those issues, which include include some restructuring in terms of boosters. I know, ultimately Andy Miller, who has run Florida State boosters for about 40 years, he and Jimbo Fisher have not gotten along over the years. That's been an issue. And yes, you know, you can say Fisher is too adversarial in the way that he handles things and all this. But the reality is, and you know, Travis Johnson was tweeting about this yesterday, and Travis was right. The reason that this stuff has gotten adversarial is because you have some of the old guard, and Travis Johnson named former Florida State defensive ends coach Jim Gladden as one of the voices here. You have some of the old guard who are constantly saying, yeah, well, we won in the past without all this stuff. We won in the past with nothing. We don't, Jimbo's always asking for this or this, but it's, you know, we don't really need that stuff. We can, you know, we should be able to win without it. And, you know, that's not modern football. Fisher understands that when Clemson has a brand new football only facility building, a football ops building, that's something. I was at Clemson this last year in that building visiting with their coaches and all. And I understand, listen, that is a totally different ball game once you've got that sort of place for recruiting. And they had recruits shuffling through there, and you can see those people are really impressed because it allows you, that kind of football ops building allows you to really showcase your program, showcase some of the family side for the players, showcase how you've got a safe spot for players to hang out all the time, for players to study, for all sorts of stuff. And you know, it's the latest bells and whistles. And Florida State has fallen behind. And Fisher, you know, people are upset about Fisher always in an adversarial way talking about, well, we need to upgrade this. We're falling behind here. And people say, well, you know, we've built everything you've asked. Well, sort of. He's wanted all this stuff from the start, but it's been one thing at a time. And talking to some sources, basically Fisher is frustrated that many of the boosters' pet projects, many of Andy Miller's pet projects, such as College Town, which, listen, that long-term should be a great deal, get priority over things that Fisher regards as more immediately important for sustaining program success, such as, you know, Florida State didn't have athletic dorms for the first few years of Fisher's coaching tenure, and he had to claw and fight to get those dorms built. Didn't have football dorms. And he fought and clawed and kicked and screamed to get that stuff. And he basically, from what I'm told, is tired of dealing with Miller in particular, but the Florida State boosters who have opposed or have dragged their feet in his perception on they've made it difficult with some of these upgrades that he's really pushed for. And in particular, last year when he had interest from LSU and he went back to Florida State and he got the new contract, he not only signed a new contract for himself, but got an increase in assistant pay, not all of which is in the current staff, because ultimately when the changes were going to happen after 2017, that increase in assistant pay was going to matter. But he got, you know, a pledge of a bigger pool for assistant pay, and the other thing he pushed for was a football only facility, and was told, yep, we're going to go ahead and do it. We'll do it for you. And we are 1 year later, and Fisher is upset that nothing has been, in his view, nothing has been done on the football ops building. And yes, I mean, the boosters are saying, well, you know, we've done, we've been doing a feasibility study. We've been, you know, engaging in all this. And Fisher's going, it's a year later, and we don't even know where the building's going to be. We can't even, we haven't decided what's going to happen. There's nothing that's been really done. He's upset because everything has moved so slowly. And he wants that building, he wants assurance that that building is not only going to happen. I think he knows it's going to happen, but he wants assurances that it's going to be that it's going to include certain things. It's going to be done certain ways. And at this point, we're a year later, and he's going, we can't break ground. Florida's, you know, breaking ground on theirs ahead of us. That's what he's saying. We can't do anything because we don't even know where it's going to be. We can't plan for it. We can't tell people what it's going to be. We can't. And this is a disadvantage. And Fisher, yes, Fisher is obsessed with resources. He's obsessed with making sure that, you know, Florida State's not behind in anything. He's frustrated that there's not enough money in his view for the shadow staff. He wants to have an Alabama in the ACC at Florida State. He wants to have, you know, that kind of commitment to those resources. And again, what one of the sources I talked to, and I talked to one of the reasons I did not record this podcast last night, which was the plan, is I spent 2 hours on the phone with a source almost. And one of the things that basically is a point of frustration is, listen, we're playing all these kickoff games for $5 million here, $4 million there, and all this stuff. And yeah, playing Alabama at the beginning of this year, Fisher knew was going to make it less likely that Florida State was going to have the year that you know everybody wants. And yeah, you know, all this stuff is being done for money. Yeah, you know, oh, all of a sudden you have the seats being removed from the stadium so that boosters can have a little bit wider seat and it's going to be nicer, but now you're losing a little bit of money on that. You take the money grab to play Bama in the opener. You do a number of these other things, and he's saying, yeah, well, we're doing this stuff that you're asking us to do for money, but then when it comes time to applying a lot of that money, it doesn't all go to football, and the thing that we need in order to maintain the money flow is to win. And everything that goes toward winning is ultimately the stuff that he's obsessed with. Now, I understand that there's a number of especially some of the boosters who have been very willing to give, and they're not part of the boys club that Miller and some of that old guard have been running. They're saying, listen, you're 5-6 this year, coach, in a year where you're supposed to compete for the national title. You don't have any leverage to talk about winning. You don't have any leverage to talk about, but in Fisher's view, that's really not the way that works. In his view, he's saying, well, you know, yeah, we played a game that ultimately we probably shouldn't have scheduled for money. We played, we lost here and there. And then some of the resource issues that we've had, in his view, have impacted. He's saying those things have impacted what we're able to do. So he's saying, you know, these are directly related. Now, again, I think it's a little bit less cut and dry on that. You know, my source yesterday was saying, yeah, well, you know, this does go both ways a little bit because, you know, when it comes to some of the money stuff, you know, Fisher doesn't want to make use of alternate uniforms, say, which you do that once or so a year, and all of a sudden you've got more merchandise sales, and then that brings in more money for the university, brings in more money for the athletic department, and there are certain things like that that, you know, he has an opportunity to bring in some of that more money, and he's been unwilling to do some of those things. So this goes a little bit of both ways in terms of where there's justifiable frustration. That again, Fisher wants, and I've heard from a number of boosters, number of big boosters, that, you know, Andy Miller has run the boosters somewhat like a personal fiefdom, and, you know, to benefit himself and his cronies. And Fisher wants to break that up. That's a big sticking point here. And that's some of what apparently the meeting with Stan Wilcox, the meetings that he was engaged in on Monday night, were about. Now, that said, that's not everything. The other thing that I understand is in play for Texas A&M is Anderson Medical Center, which is about an hour and a half from College Station. Depending on where you live, what side of things, you know, you can get there a little sooner or later. But that's a factor. And normally in the past, any job that Fisher's been offered or has shown great interest in Fisher, his kids and the situation there is something that has kept him from considering really leaving. That, you know, the basically the situation in Tallahassee is a pretty good one for them. And yes, Ethan's care for his Fanconi anemia runs through a doctor, the top doctor for Fanconi anemia in the country, who's up in Minnesota. So, you know, that's not Anderson Medical Center. However, when it comes time for certain treatments and things, yeah, you can go through the provider up in Minnesota, but, you know, having facilities for specific treatments if they're ever needed, that becomes a factor. So apparently that is another big sticking point, a big consideration. And Fisher is torn on a lot of this stuff. And I, you know, listen, if he makes a decision on the basis of his kid, on the basis of that sort of thing, then I don't think any of us could blame him. So given that, you know, I think this is much more of a viable, from everything I've been told, this is a much more viable possibility. And, you know, again, you know, I've done my best to answer a lot of the questions that I've gotten without doing a question and answer show. But, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions about, you know, what changed? Why would Jimbo consider this one and not, you know, other ones? Why, he has less leverage. What is he trying to get? He's trying to get assurances and trying to get commitments to things that he's previously been told he would have commitments about. And, you know, Texas A&M, in addition to his pay bit, they've told him he would have an unlimited pool for assistant hires. And, you know, the fact is, with a couple of situations, he tried to make other hires than the guys that are on his staff, but it was vetoed because of expense in the past, and he doesn't want that to happen again. Now, one thing I've heard some people suggest that, you know, Fisher, well, you know, this means that he wouldn't have to fire his friends or, you know, different things like that. That is absurd. First of all, the friends that he has on the staff, not all the coaches on the staff are friends with Jimbo, I can tell you that. But Rick Trickett's retiring. That's not a factor. Now, starting over without Rick is going to be tough. But that's going to be true at Florida State or Texas A&M. But Rick's retiring. Yeah, Charles Kelly is a friend, but, you know, Jimbo's going to make a decision there one way or another. And if he leaves, it's the same thing. He knows it's the same thing for Charles Kelly and his family one way or another, whether he's fired or whether he's not. Leaving, it amounts to firing him. And for Fisher, that's the same thing. So that's part of what makes this painful either way. It does not make a bit of difference to him in his mental calculus as to whether or not this means firing people versus leaving, which means that they're fired anyway. And, you know, there are guys on this staff, you know, the one guy that is likely, that is sure to be on this staff next year is Odell Higgins. He's completely safe. I've talked about this before. But the other thing, by the way, that I've heard rumblings on is that Brewster is likely to leave Florida State now to go to Florida to join Dan Mullen at Florida because of some of the relationships there. And that may be regardless of what Fisher does. Now, he may decide to stay at Florida State, but I'm told be unsurprised if Tim Brewster winds up at Florida with Dan Mullen. Which, by the way, that hire by Florida with Dan Mullen was a great hire. It was a better hire than they would have gotten with Chip Kelly, certainly in terms of fit, and I think in terms of level of coach. I think Dan Mullen's one of the best coaches in the country. That's a great hire by Florida. Mullen would have been my choice if Fisher had left. If Fisher leaves, Mullen would have been my choice. But Mullen is now off the table because he's now at Florida. So now Florida's going to be turned around pretty quickly because Dan Mullen, I think, is, you can make a case that Dan Mullen made Urban Meyer more than the reverse. Look at what happened to Florida when Dan Mullen left. That's when Urban crashed. And then Urban found Tom Herman and was able to do a couple things early on at Ohio State. And look at what's happened since Tom Herman left. And this, by the way, is why if Jimbo Fisher leaves, I'm big on making sure that whatever coach you replace him with is an offensive-minded coach who runs his own offense. It's important especially in modern college football, I think it's important to have the head coach be the one who runs the offense. It gives you stability, because if you don't do that, when you hire a new, let's say, you know, I had a question. Somebody asked, well, you know, would, you know, couldn't you just have a, you know, hire, you know, a good CEO and then make sure that, you know, you hire a great offensive coordinator? Sure, you can do it. And you'll probably get two or three really good years out of it. But here's the thing: that first year is a rebuild. Second year is probably the year that you're gonna get as much out of it as you can. You might get a third year before that offensive coordinator gets poached, and then you have to restart, and you have to find someone who's that good again. That's the issue. If you have a quality offensive coordinator at the head coaching position, you don't have to do that. You can maintain continuity. And on offense, that matters, because every time you learn a new offense, it means a step back in terms of how players can play. It adds that much more complexity. You're learning new terminology, you're learning new concepts, you're learning all of this stuff changes just a little bit. And those little changes year to year make a really big difference. It's a whole lot easier. Every year you're in the same system means you can play that much better, that much faster than otherwise. So, and you know, I'm asked, do I trust that the administration is ready to move on the right person in the event that Jimbo is gone? And no, I'm not confident in that. I was told of who several of the names on the short list would be, and I know that the administration has, through back channels, contacted some of these people. For example, I know who some of these names are, and I'm not real comfortable. Partly because the top name on my list isn't on that short list. If I'm Florida State, and Jimbo Fisher leaves, the first guy I call, the guy I want to hire, is Jeff Brohm at Purdue. Because basically you're getting Bobby Petrino, but 25 years younger, much younger. You're getting a young Bobby Petrino with none of the baggage. A guy who runs that Petrino system, which is one of the best offensive systems in football, and basically would be a long-term hire at Florida State. Hire Jeff Brohm. It's, you know, that to me is a pretty natural thing. And he's had success at more than one place now. I'm told he's not on the list. I'm told that the list, actually, one of the names that was suggested by one admin was David Cutcliffe, which didn't go over well among some of the others in that room. But that tells you where things are starting. Now, I'm told that the most likely hire, and I know for a fact that this person has been contacted through back channels, is Willie Taggart. And Taggart would be a risk. Much bigger risk, I think, than Jeff Brohm. Taggart's a good coach, but I'm not sure he'd be equal to or an upgrade on Jimbo Fisher. The guy can recruit, but you know, I talked to the head of a coaching search advisory firm on Sunday night. And that person was saying, listen, Taggart wouldn't be in my top 25 for Florida State's hires, based on the metrics that firm does and all of that. Taggart wouldn't be in the top 25. Said, here's the thing, and this was part of the rationale. Taggart is a recruiter, first and foremost. He's a really good recruiter. But as this person mentioned, Florida State recruits itself. It's one of the top three recruiting programs out there. You don't need a great recruiter as a head coach. You need a great coach to shape that talent that you're going to get inevitably because you're Florida State. Do you want a guy who can recruit? Absolutely. You don't want a guy who can't recruit. That's different. You don't want a guy that's going to chase kids away. But you want a head coach who can manage, who can run a great process, and make sure that, you know, ideally you have an offensive head coach that's going to make that's going to be an X's and O's guy. Brohm was, by the way, this person's number two pick. And actually, I think I talked him into that being the number one, because the number one was a little bit older and came with a little bit more baggage. He was like, you know, actually, come to think of it, you know, by metrics, you know, they're not that far off, and Brom is younger and so on. So anyway, you know, with Taggart, you're getting a great recruiter, but here's the problem. We've seen what a great recruiter looks like at a great recruiting program. Your floor with Willie Taggart is Ron Zook. Now, that means that you get, you know, 4 years or so of mediocre to decent play, depending on staff hires and all that, and you leave a super stocked roster for the next guy. But whoever would take over after Jimbo Fisher would be getting a super stacked roster to begin with a few problem children on it, but a stacked roster. So you would hope that you're hiring a coach that's going to come in and shape things and be able to win right away. And I'm just not sure that Taggart is that guy. You know, again, I think there are other options out there that would be better for Florida State. But anyway, I'm not confident that the administration would do so. So I was also asked about what would happen in terms of the bowl practices. Would Florida State, if Fisher left, would Florida State skip the bowl game? No. Bowl practices are too valuable. You're talking about another spring practice for players to go through and get fundamentals work done and all that. It's, you know, others were saying, well, you know, if you've got an outgoing coaching staff and all that, would it matter? Yes, it still matters. You're still playing football. You're still getting fundamentals coaching, you know, good fundamentals coaching, or at least mediocre fundamentals coaching, or repping through certain things that you don't get many chances to do. You don't get to work on fundamentals during the season all that much. So that's the stuff that you've got to do in the in bowl preparation regardless. So, like I said, we'll see what happens, but I am told that as of right now, it doesn't appear that Fisher even knows what he's going to do. And we won't know until late in the week, Thursday, Friday. You know, at Texas A&M, they are having a Board of Regents meeting on Thursday for what appears to be the approving of the offering of a formal contract to Fisher. And you don't do that. You don't get to that point in the process unless you believe you absolutely believe that you're going to sign the person that you're offering. But we don't know, and I'm told that this is still a bit of a fluid situation. You know, we'll see. But you know, again, the stuff that Fisher wants is much more in line with some structural changes in terms of making sure that some of the commitment to facilities and all that people are not going to stand in the way of what he wants on some of those things in terms of modernizing those aspects. And he wants to modernize the boosters, which are run much more like it's the 70s, 80s, or 90s than they are the 21st century. And listen, I'm not saying that Andy Miller has been has run the boosters into the ground or anything. I'm talking about, this is more about a power struggle between people who have a little bit different vision. And yeah, you know, things like College Town, these are visionary ideas. The University Center was his idea. You know, some of this stuff's, you know, pretty big deal. But at the same point, some of these things have had the coaching staff and Fisher in particular frustrated because, you know, you're worried about, you know, all the ribbon boards and different things like that. And yeah, those things bring in some income, but you're not as ready to hit the ground running with things like the standalone football facility. And that becomes a sticking point. So we'll see. It is not going to happen that Fisher would leave before Saturday, by the way. I got a number of these questions. Even if he announces that he's going, he would coach the last game of the regular season. But yeah, that's the way that works. Now, another question, I did get a question on why would Stanford offensive coordinator Mike Bloomgren not be at the top of potential replacements for Jimbo? He is a Tallahassee native and a former assistant at FSU. Yes, he is a Tallahassee native and a former assistant at FSU, but we're talking about a guy who's the offensive coordinator of a place of Stanford where he doesn't even call the plays. and you're gonna give him the keys to the kingdom at Florida State? No, that's not realistic. No, you're gonna try to go for someone who is a little higher on the chain. You're gonna try to, you know, Florida State's one of the few places that can actually poach a sitting coach, a sitting head coach with with experience and success at multiple programs, whether that be Willie Taggart, who has had some success, or you know, again, a guy that I would prefer, a guy like Brohm. Those are the you don't consider an offensive coordinator who doesn't call plays at his own offense for that. So let's see. Couple other questions. I've got some questions about what Fisher will do in terms of coaching staff. And here's the other thing. I understand that again, Fisher has been still recruiting other coaches to come coach with him at Florida State, to the point where one of the potential hires was actually, you know, has been considering looking at, has had somebody, you know, taking care of looking at real estate in Tallahassee for him. So given that, again, this is one of those things where I keep getting asked, what do you think is going to happen? I find it hard to believe. And again, talking to the coaching search firm advisory guy, talking to different people around, there is a significant amount of disbelief. And this is true even within the Florida State Athletic Department. There's a good amount of disbelief that Fisher would leave. Because it's one of those, like, this could be, you know, this is a major, major career submarining move. Unless he's looking at Texas A&M as a stepping stone for somewhere else, that's a major downgrade in terms of the job that he would be going from to the job that he's getting. And, you know, it's like, people just don't believe that would happen. Same for the same reasons that I didn't. But, you know, personal things come in and feeling like, you know, promises haven't been lived up to and all that. Well, you know, when feelings get hurt like that, well, you know, maybe stuff changes. But, you know, bottom line is, I did get some questions about, you know, what Fisher would do in terms of staff if he does stay, you know, for example, could co-defensive coordinators, is there a possibility of co-defensive coordinators, and could it cause internal strife? You know, would it be possible? You know, I've mentioned Derek Ansley as a possibility of being a defensive coordinator. What happens if Fisher hired, say, Ansley and Kevin Scherer as co-DCs? Would that be an issue? Well, maybe. But usually, even when you have co-DCs, you have an arrangement on who has say. That's a title thing for money and also for potential job upgrades in the future. So, depending on how that works, you know, you do it that way, and that doesn't necessarily have to be an issue as long as they understand what they're getting into. And I was asked, you know, could I give a brief breakdown of what scheme we could see next year on defense? It would be the Saban defense. It's a pattern matching multiple defense. That's what he would hire for. That's what those guys would run, and you know, he wants to be able to disguise coverages and blitzes and all that. And yes, Florida State has the personnel to do all of that stuff. But again, right now, the real question is whether Fisher is going to even be there to make those hires. So, you know, right now, I don't know what the final result of that's going to be. I still lean toward Fisher most likely returning, but it is a whole lot more fluid and there's a whole lot more possibility that he leaves than I had given credit for, you know, weeks ago when I first started hearing about this stuff. You know, and again, this is a situation where, you know, I have some sources that are in Tallahassee, and it's not often that I have a source who works in the Moore Center, works in the football program, who asks me if I hear anything concrete to text that person. Text me if you hear anything concrete. Well, you know, that's where we are. That people who are actually working in the football program, in, you know, are uncertain enough about this that they don't know what to expect, and they're hoping to get a window on this because they know that if Fisher leaves, their job is in jeopardy, and they need to make sure that they've got their resume all ready to go. And so they're trying to get a jump on this. There's a lot of nervousness in the Moore Center. And again, this is why that whole idea of, well, you know, this would be the easy way out for Fisher not to have to fire anybody. That is absolutely, that's bunk. Because if Fisher leaves, he knows that not only a few coaches wind up losing their jobs, but support staff people, all sorts of other people in the athletic department that are connected to the program that some new guy may want to come in and change, you know, this or that person. So he knows that. He knows that that amounts to getting a lot more people fired. So that makes it harder, not easier, to leave. And that's where, you know, some people in the program continue to think, I find it implausible. I find it hard to believe that he's going to hang some of these people out to dry. But again, when you feel like promises haven't been lived up to, and you're pushing for certain structural stuff that will make some of the adversarial issues that you've struggled with. And again, Fisher's responsible for that as much as anybody, but that relationship where, you know, Florida State was in the dark ages facilities wise. And, you know, the source that I talked to last night said, you know, Florida State is basically Moneyball era Oakland A's compared to the rest of college football in a lot of ways, and has been for, you know, decades. Well, you know, when you're trying to force and push for all this stuff, and, you know, Fisher modernized the program. If he leaves, everybody should be grateful, because this job is way better, way more attractive to anybody else coming after him than it was when Bowden left, when they really didn't have the stuff to keep up with the Joneses. Now that job has almost everything. There's still a number of places where they're a little behind, but he's pushing for those things to get done. And those things are eventually going to get done for the next coach or for him. So, you know, in that regard, he's fought a lot of those tough battles. But he's tired of fighting some of those battles and is trying to get assurances and some of those things that stuff's going to be done to his satisfaction. And if it is, then my guess is the guy stays. But I really, you know, beyond that, I have no real idea. I'm not in his head. I don't know what he's going to do. And we'll see. We'll see from here. Should know, like I said, late in the week. Maybe not by the next podcast, but sometime later in the week. If you got any more questions, go ahead and get them to me via social media, or email, or whatever your preferred form of contact is. Not a whole lot more to say, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap it there. Once again, this podcast is sponsored by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. Contact Luis for any real estate needs in the greater Jacksonville area. You will not be disappointed. Let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast. Once again, this has been the Unconquered podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.